And now, broadcasting from their secret hideout, Checkpoint XP presents a show about comic books and superheroes. Robbie Landis, Joe Sloan, The Other Identity.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to The Other Identity.
Oh my god, I had missed that theme.
We've been away for a minute.
Yes, we have.
In our lairs.
We've been being rebooted.
We've been rebooted, or maybe we've just been laying low.
It's only our second first episode this year.
You know what? No. Yes, that is correct, because that puts us a little bit more in line with how comic books just tend to be.
Yeah, that's what Squirrel Girl number one, second time, first issue.
This is still technically The Other Identity episode 14, but
right.
This is the third first issue.
Right, but it's still, they're using the legacy numbering.
Yeah, no, exactly.
The episodes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So we get to use both. The idea that we're legacy, we're number, 14, 15, whatever it is.
Right.
But
it's
also,
it's a number one issue, though, so we can charge more money for it, and we can do a massive launch event.
Yeah, well, what's our launch event?
We're in a nice new studio, and we charge...
No, the last one was in the studio, too, though.
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, because I thought what you were considering our last first episode was when we talked about Endgame.
Yeah,
with everyone
that was not in here though.
It wasn't?
No.
Are you sure?
I'm certain. That was at Nate's place, because it was right after Endgame, dude. That was in May.
New studio.
Time has really flown though over the last month, hasn't
yeah,
it? Though, like
no,
everything
it,
has
it
blurred
has.
Together in just like one. Amorphous,
it's just
a blob,
big thing. Yeah,
yeah.
But we're here now, and we're talking about Far From Home, Spider-Man Far From Home today. So
if you haven't seen it, what are you waiting for?
You know what, actually, let me go ahead and put the spoiler mark in the title as well.
I hate that we even have to put the spoiler mark. You should know better.
And yet, two of our crew are sitting right out there on the other side of that glass that haven't seen it.
Well, that's why they're not in here.
Well, I'm just saying,
but they wouldn't expect
though.
Us to put a big spoiler warning up on the door for them. They would just be like, oh, they're probably talking about Far From Home.
Yeah, well, all right. So here's what we're going to do, guys. We are going to talk about Far From Home, but that's not going to be it. We're also going to talk a little bit about what the ending for Far From Home means from the future of Spider-Man and really the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe as well.
Because it's a lot.
It is. There's actually... There was more out of this than I think I expected. You know, we'll get that. Let's talk about the movie though.
Okay,
Spider-Man, Far From Home.
Yeah,
Mysterio as the villain. I know that you've always sort of been lukewarm on Mysterio, but he was always from the cartoon one of my favorite villains because it was more than just look. You get the Rhino, you get the Shocker,
right.
You get the Scorpion, you get the Green Goblin. All that is just about all right. They're fighting. It's just more, brute strength and agility and just a fight scene. But Mysterio was always about something different, was always about, the mental and psychological side of things.
It was like when you saw Batman going up against the Scarecrow.
Yes,
when you had
the
Scarecrow
was one of my favorite too.
Yeah, you knew it was going to be a very cerebral episode.
Yes.
There was going to be more to it. And yeah, I don't mean to say I never enjoyed Mysterio, because even in the comics, he's part of some incredible storylines.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a big part of them.
Well, and he has so many iconic covers, I feel like, too. I mean, the whole sequence, when he goes to find Nick Fury because he's like, oh, Mysterio was a bad guy after all. And you get that whole sequence of him just being screwed with Mysterio.
Yeah.
I'm like, I couldn't pick them out and tell you exactly which ones, but I feel like every single, you could press the pause button at any moment, and that was some type of iconic Mysterio
cover.
Spider-Man cover.
Yeah, I can see that. And really, that whole sequence really is where it started to feel like a Scarecrow sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you remember in Batman Arkham when you fight Scarecrow and
go
through his weird dream worlds?
Mm-hmm.
It definitely gave off those kinds of vibes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was never a huge Mysterio fan, but once again, just like they did with the Vulture, I heard the Vulture announced and went, ugh.
See, even I did the same thing for the Vulture too.
Yeah, but after the first time, you're like, all right, I'll give Mysterio a chance.
Dude, in Feige we trust.
Man, I tell you what, we've been hurt so many times saying things like that, but he just but keeps delivering. I know, he keeps delivering.
You know who Feige is? Feige is, in the comic book world, to us, what Squaresoft was to RPGs in the 90s.
Oh, but that means it's going to end badly.
No, no, no. What that means...
That means there's going to be a turning point.
What that means is when Feige leaves the company,
yeah,
we just stop watching Marvel movies.
We're going to...
Or we take our expectations way down.
What if the merger with Fox is Enix?
See, the problem with Square Enix...
The problem
Enix.
Is Enix took over.
Square, yes.
Yeah.
That's right. This is a whole different conversation. Let's get back on topic.
Yeah, that's a weird right. point.
So here's my question for you. Being that you always kind of had this... For Mysterio.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the Vulture, you know, there are a lot of people now that are looking at Far From Home and being like, Marvel's really... getting their villains right. You know, obviously, we had Killmonger in Black Panther. Thanos
awesome.
Is still, I think, at the top of the echelon here. Vulture's up there as well. How do you feel that they did with Mysterio, especially rooting him in the Stark legacy?
Him
and his cadre.
Right, so I really appreciate that. Like, it would have been very easy for them to go, okay, listen, everyone knows Mysterio is a master of illusion, so we're just not going to try to play it up like that. They really,
yeah.
But they leaned
or
into
even
it.
Giving him like illusion powers. Like, yeah, sure, he got his powers somehow. Whatever.
No, but them literally saying like, no, this is the closure of the Stark saga. We're going to tie up any loose ends from Iron Man 3
and Iron Man 1.
And yeah, exactly. Because even the guy getting to hear Tony Stark managed to build this in a cave. Getting to hear that again,
yep.
was. Pretty awesome.
They did so well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because what they could have easily done, the problem they could have ran into is that this feels too much like an Iron Man movie. But this was still Peter's movie. This was still a Spider-Man movie. And this really makes me fear now for the future of the MCU more than I ever have. Because I think we also recently found out, and I want to confirm it, it might still be a rumor,
right.
but apparently written into the contract or the partnership that they have with Sony is that Spider-Man 2 Far From Home has to make $1 billion at the box office.
Yeah, I think MovieWeb reported that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, the rights fully go back to Sony, and now they get to, you know, do their whole thing. So the whole thing basically seems like Marvel probably came to them and goes, look, we can guarantee you X amount of dollars if you just let us do it
and
use it in our thing. So now there's always going to be this chance that if there is one that doesn't quite perform, now there's a lot banked on Peter right now in the MCU, and if they could potentially lose him.
Well, I think Sony gets him back no matter what after Spider-Man 3. I think it's just they would have gone sooner.
Or they renegotiate.
Or they would have a chance to renegotiate. Maybe right. that's a possibility as well. But yeah, I mean, it's already at $866 billion.
Yeah, I'm sure
million,
it'll get
there.
I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, this one's going to clear, no problem.
But they've put a lot on him, you know. It seems like Tony didn't just like leave. I mean, he left him a freaking a global defense unit with killbots in the sky. Like they're really kind of going, isn't it? In 6-1 in the continuity 616, didn't Stark give Peter Stark Industries?
I don't know if it's 616, but there is a timeline where
one.
That happened.
Yeah. And I mean, they very much, you know, and not even just in what Tony gave him, but even throughout the entire thing, you know, it's all about this weight that's put on his shoulders. And we know that there's, you know, deleted scenes where people are like, you're going to be the next Iron Man, you know.
Right.
So Marvel's really pushing this idea that Peter could potentially take on the same mantle that Tony has had this whole time.
Yeah, and I mean, it does feel like they're kind of setting that up where we'll probably have Captain Marvel step into the Captain America position while Peter Parker steps into the Iron Man position. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated them telling that story throughout the movie, because I think logically I went into that movie thinking like, well, yeah, with Tony gone, I feel like Peter's the natural choice to kind of lead the Avengers, but he's still young Peter in this.
Yes.
He's not college age or even older Peter Parker. So how would that work? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they don't shy away from that in this. They literally, we're going to tackle that subject head on. It's the main kind of issue that Peter's struggling with. Is like, I'm not ready to be Iron Man. I'm not ready to be the savior of the Earth. And it's kind of, it felt like it was his coming of age kind of story. You know what I mean? And of course, we can get into how the movie ended in a little bit. But I appreciated them tackling that head on as opposed to trying to dance around and just like suspend your disbelief.
Well, imagine how far we've came in superhero movies where the origin or like the period where they're trying to accept themselves goes from a 10-minute montage into what right. now feels like it's going to be three movies before he's really finally stepped into that.
Right, because in the first movie, it's all about him wanting to be an Avenger. I want to be recognized like that. I want to be there with you guys. And then the second movie, he's gotten what he wants.
Well, and realizing he's not ready for it.
Right.
And in the second movie, now being thrust into it and still knowing I'm not ready for this, but you have to rise to the challenge.
Right.
So I feel like the third movie is going to be like that's where his origins will officially end and he will fully come into the hero role where he realizes I don't have a choice. I have to grow up now.
It's kind of amazing how the one thing they said they weren't going to do with Spider-Man Homecoming was give us the origin of Spider-Man. They're like, we've seen Ben Parker enough.
Mm-hmm.
And really, yeah, they're instead just spending three movies telling the origin of Spider-Man.
But doing it the right way. Because
right.
you know, normally we think of origin stories as, oh, how'd you get your power? But right. I think that they've just evolved beyond that. And now it's about the idea of really coming to fully, you know, accept that responsibility and what it means to you.
Okay, I like that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we got off Mysterio way too quick. Such a yeah. great villain. We were putting so many hopes and ideas on the whole multiverse theory, and I loved his whole speech in that room. You know, when it finally reveals, like, okay, yeah, he is the villain we thought he was.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like interdimensional traveler coming from my world that was destroyed by elementals.
Yeah.
It's so stupid and exactly yeah. what someone like Nick Fury would need to hear.
Yeah. So yeah, when you know they finally do reveal, of course he is a master of illusion. I know originally he was like a special effects artist or something.
A Hollywood
like that.
Special effects
yeah.
artist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they do eventually go to great lengths to show how great a lengths they've had to go to make all these things appear to be
yeah,
real.
Yeah. And first of all, something that I'd like to just throw out there and point out to people that are like, yeah, they had to retcon something from Iron Man 3 though. I go, all right, look, retconning is when you have a fact that doesn't agree with what's currently going on, and so you have to go, okay, never mind, that's not true anymore. What they did with Iron Man 3 and the barf technology, that's what I've always thought was really clever, where they can go back, show you some new information that doesn't necessarily contradict anything, but now tells a different story. And that's what they did with Quentin Beck being the one who basically created barf, and then
right.
Tony was like, that was just my little experiment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really think about that. But yeah, so we see he's got the ability to basically make any illusion
yeah,
that
these,
he wants.
These drones have super advanced illusion, holographic illusion tech.
And I want to give credit to Jake Gyllenhaal here, who I'm not the biggest Jake Gyllenhaal fan. He's fine.
He's had some okay stuff.
I wouldn't go see a movie because Jake Gyllenhaal's in it, but
true.
He's fine.
Such a logical progression, though, from Bubble Boy to Bubble
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, who'd have thought, right? But I thought he was great in this.
I no, thought I agree.
I
you
thought
very
he
well.
Loved being Mysterio.
Well, and what was so great about Mysterio, and again, this even goes back to the Vulture as well, is that they were, yes, they filled that villain role, but like you understood what they were doing. Like he genuinely cared about Peter, right? Like those moments that he had with him, like, you know, up on
yeah.
the balcony or wherever it was that they were sitting, like those were genuine moments.
He's just also a sociopath.
Like, yes.
I do believe that he was genuinely upset that he had to kill Peter.
Me too.
I just don't know that he genuinely had to kill Peter.
I mean, you know, potato, potato. But.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know what I mean? Though, like, I do think like he didn't want it to be that way, but wow, what a crazy asshole.
I do have to say, though, I am disappointed. Now, obviously, comics, they could always change their mind or bring him back for whatever reason. But
right.
but as of now, he's apparently dead. You know, he got shot by his own drone.
Would seem like it.
I am a little bit disappointed that that's potentially the end of Mysterio's arc, though.
I mean, I feel like Mysterio's arc, it's interesting that they are definitely setting up Peter's entire arc.
Yes.
Through Mysterio.
Well,
because Mysterio has done those sorts of things in the Marvel Universe before, where, I mean, like, wasn't Old Man Logan, wasn't that all set up because of something Mysterio did?
Yes,
in the
yes.
original telling
yes, yes,
of it?
Yes, yeah. It started because Mysterio, you know, used his powers to make Logan murder everybody.
Right, exactly. So, it's interesting that they're using Mysterio to set up what is likely going to be a major arc for Peter throughout the next saga.
Mm-hmm.
whether or not he's actually dead, I mean, it's the problem with illusion characters. How many times has Loki fooled us?
Okay, but Loki is magic, and we have Edith, who, by the way, her name, even dead, I'm still the hero, or whatever it was for Tony.
I'm the hero.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
But, you know, he uses illusion tech, and she said there are no illusions.
That's fair.
So, I mean, we'll see, but...
Just with illusion characters, you never
I know, but, like, because the Vulture's obviously, you know, still alive, and he's a very... He's a super complex and great character, too, because, you know, he has a chance to sell out Peter and his identity.
He doesn't do it.
Right. Yeah. So, you know what? First of all, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. That's actually about to be the next arc of our own episode here, but I'd like to remind you guys that we want to know what your thoughts are as well. You know, what did you think of the flick? What did you think of Mysterio? You can connect with us, obviously, if you're watching the show live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. But you can also head over to all of our social medias for Checkpoint. That's CheckpointXP on Twitter, Facebook, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. You know, we'd love to be able to hear what you guys think. So as with all Marvel movies, our discussion isn't complete until we talk about the post-credit scenes and what they could mean for the future. Now, we had two here that we need to talk about. And I think one specifically affects Spider-Man, and then one, the greater MCU.
So, okay, so where do you want to start?
So we're going to start at the end of Spider-Man. So we see, you know, he's back in
New York.
In New York. Mm-hmm. He takes Mary Jane on a little web-slinging journey. And
I love
the way,
that she hates web-slinging.
Oh, and I love that, because back in the other two Spider-Mans with Tobey Maguire and the other guy, it was always a very... Andrew Garfield. Looked very, like, elegant and, like...
Yeah.
No, this is, like, he's... flopping around all over the place.
Well, because you can tell he hasn't carried someone doing it very many times.
Sure, but it looked better. It looked natural, and it made it feel like its own. Yes, it looked very real. And then after the credits, he lands down. She's like, "I'm never doing that again." And as he's going to fly off to do whatever it is that he's going to do, J. Jonah Jameson, in a very InfoWars style thing, pops up on one of the big screens.
And they got J.K. Simmons to come back and play him.
Because who could do it better?
No one.
Nobody.
No one can do it better.
No one.
And the video game proves it.
That's right. And and he has footage from the attack in Paris, the Spider-Man attack, and basically in his dying moments, Mysterio had one of his henchmen, you know, cut up some, you know, one final trick of the eye, and makes it look like it was Spider-Man who executed that attack, killed Mysterio, and Mysterio announces to the world that Spider-Man is Peter Parker.
Yes. So, okay, so a couple questions about that.
Kooky Persona in the chat says hashtag fake news.
Yeah, kind of. Part of it is accurate. It's technically true, sort of. here's my question. Because I only saw it the one time, so I got to make sure I have my facts right on this. There's no way that you think Jonah might have cut up the footage, right?
No, I think that was
definitely
Mysterio's plan. Because when he tells him to take the illusion down, he's like, "Are you sure?" And he's like, "Yes." And then he mentions a different plan or something.
Yeah, right? You're right. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then nothing ends up happening. And because there's no illusions there at the time, because that's what I thought. Maybe he's faking his death to get away.
Yeah.
But I think this was one final fuck you to Peter, basically, you know, because again, he did feel like he genuinely cared, but in the end, you're right, he is still a sociopath.
Yeah, he definitely is.
And even after he's dead, we do see the guy from Iron Man 1, I forget what his name is, but, you know, he download complete or simulation complete, and he pops it out.
You're right, yeah.
And then, yeah, I think he took that, so I don't think that Jonah, because Jonah was, what's great about J. Jonah Jameson is, I don't think that he's a bad guy. I think that he truly is a patriot, and he thinks that what he's doing is for the betterment of New York, of the world, that he really does think that he's, you know, seeking out truth and whatnot. But he just, you know, has the wrong idea about Peter, because I don't know if you've ever read the Ultimate Timeline.
Yeah, I have.
But in Ultimatum, you know, he actually sees from the Daily Bugle with the you know, the city flooded. He sees Spider-Man out there saving people and thinks that he drowns, you know, that he perished. And basically it changes his whole perspective.
Right.
And I think Ultimatum in Spider-Man starts with this sort of ode to Spider-Man written by Jameson personally. So, no, I don't think that Jameson, you know, cut it up.
Okay.
Knowing that it was false.
So, I appreciate that way more then, because, yeah, what is interesting about Jameson is his willingness to misinterpret the facts.
Yes.
Like, he wants the facts, but he has his opinion on what the facts actually mean.
Correct.
Which makes him a great foil, especially in our modern era of journalism and news, where we see much the same thing. And that's what his character was so interesting about in the video game, with Just the Facts with J. Jonah Jameson. Mm-hmm. That was one of the highlights of the Spider-Man video game was the podcast with Jonah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you talk about a character who's
Was that J.K. Simmons as well? Did he do the voice of that?
He sure did.
Perfect.
It's perfect, right?
Never cast anyone else.
I know, right? Especially like because he was great in the original Spider-Man movies and the Tobey Maguire movies. And I
don't think they had
one in Andrew Garfield's now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and to see it be the cast by the same person every time is amazing, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's such an important part of the Spider-Man kind of mythos.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's going to be a super interesting time because... Well, my favorite dynamics with Jonah is Peter working for him mm-hmm. and getting the pictures of Spider-Man, obviously. We're not going to get that, obviously, now because everyone knows Peter is
Spider-Man.
Going
a completely different route, which brings me to my next point and what I'm excited for and also what writer and I think director is excited for as well is you know, he's talked about this idea that what they're set up to do now is a storyline that is new to the mythos of Spider-Man, one that's never been really explored before in comics or in the movie.
Right.
Because he's also mentioned his desire to bring Kraven the Hunter to the big screen.
So, to that point, I mean, the only time that I can think of where we actively see Peter Parker known to the world as being Spider-Man is during Civil War. Where he's one of the superheroes who unmasks and works for Tony Stark. Obviously, we're not getting that story.
Well, and that's also a bigger story as well. That's not just about you know, Peter.
But in that story, when Peter Parker unmasks and comes out as a hero, he's a hero. Everyone loves him.
Mm-hmm.
In this story, he's going to be struggling with very much. He's going to have to be a vigilante, effectively. He's going to be a hero on the run.
Mm-hmm.
Which
poor Flash. What's he going to think?
Yeah, right, exactly. He's going to be heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because we're going to see, despite the fact that it's Peter stepping into Iron Man's role, Iron Man was the one who was always very much on the side of the government and doing it legally and everything, whereas Captain America was the one who would say no.
Well, also speaking about the parallels earlier, too, the way that Iron Man started his whole journey was coming out to the world and saying, I am Iron Man, mm-hmm. and now stepping into that role throughout the whole movie, Peter's forced to do the exact same thing.
He is Spider-Man.
So... first of all, I think Kraven makes great sense because Kraven is someone who, you know, goes around the world hunting the most dangerous beings.
Right.
Now, knowing who he could potentially hunt in this Spider-Man, that makes perfect sense why he'd come after him.
I agree. And again, for the third time, I heard Kraven the Hunter and went, oh, God, why?
Now,
and then I stopped myself and went, in Feige we trust.
But I will err on the side of caution with Kraven because we can see what his motivations would be, but what's the part that makes him human? What's the potential part of the Kraven storyline that sets him apart from all the other iterations that we've seen?
Yeah, so with the Vulture, we get a very different interpretation of who the Vulture is. They do a good job of taking, let's take this villain and try to figure out where they fit within the greater MCU universe. So mm-hmm. they looked at the Vulture and said, hey, after the attack on New York, there would be people who would salvage that.
Yeah.
Let's explore that. Okay, that's where the Vulture's going to appear.
And those are people that need those jobs.
Right. Mysterio. We have some leftover loose ends from the Iron Man story. We'll use Mysterio to tie those up. I would imagine that Kraven, as much as it makes sense for him to say, okay, Peter is this Spider-Man, I'm going to hunt him, I would guess that, give it a couple movies, because I'm going to guess that another motivating factor is going to appear for Kraven.
All right, let me pitch one to you.
Okay.
All right. So, since the rise of superpowered individuals, a lot of terrible stuff has happened. Obviously, there are those who do mean well. Your Captain Americas, your Iron Mans.
Yes.
But even they have damage that they cause.
Right.
I think that Kraven has probably made a name for himself as someone who goes around hunting down these superpowered individuals that he can, that he definitely deems as not being worthy. And I would even say that Kraven probably to a certain degree realizes that just in war and in stuff that beings of this immense power are going to cause some collateral damage. But for the most part, they do more good. But he sees essentially a child with this power and makes the decision that that can't be. He's going to hurt more.
Especially if he believes what Mysterio showed the world.
Exactly. See, so I think he's going to believe that first. He's going to come after Peter, but I don't think that Kraven's going to be the sole villain. I think that we're also going to start to see, because they introduce at the end of Homecoming, Scorpion.
Yes.
Right? And yep. Scorpion wants him as well. And so I think throughout the course of whatever this movie is, with all these different... oh, no.
Well, I mean, because now we've also heard rumors of Spider-Man and Venom interacting, too.
Oh, no. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
So Sony has a deal with Marvel. They get Peter for 3 movies.
Correct.
Right?
As far as we know, yeah.
One more movie. Everyone knows who he is. What happened in the comics the last time that someone knew who he was and brought out all the other foes? The death of Spider-Man.
Oh, no. You can't kill him now.
You kill him right at the end of the trilogy just in time to bring in Miles.
What a big F you to Sony.
I mean, no, that could have even been the play from all along.
Maybe it was, yeah.
But the idea that I was working at was that, yes, Kraven comes here to hunt them. Obviously, we have other villains that are after Peter as well. And throughout the movie, you know, Kraven realizes, you know, trying to hunt him, seeing that Peter is actually the hero, seeing these other, you know, superpowered actual villains going after him and causing harm, and Peter, you know, trying to save people and do his best to salvage the situation, that Kraven actually ends up, because again, I don't think that Kraven is inherently an evil person who wants to do harm,
right?
But
you're talking more like Kraven the Bounty Hunter as opposed to,
yeah,
just a hunter.
Well, and I think there's actually been a recent issue with Kraven and I think his son, where his son basically kind of goes a little mad and, you know, is trying to kill Peter, and Kraven actually ends up sacrificing himself to stop his son and save Peter. So
I would be massively disappointed if Spider-Man 3 was Spider-Man's last, if it was Tom Holland's last run, just because I feel like they've got such a unique opportunity to let us watch a superhero grow up. We've watched Tom Holland, you know.
Younger Spider-Man has always been my favorite take on superheroes in general.
Absolutely. And so we've gotten to watch him, you know, in early high school and now late high school. And I want to see him in college in a movie and him in post-college over the next 10 years. And literally, we'll get to watch Spider-Man grow up and go through all the different incarnations of Spider-Man. I would be really disappointed to not get to kind of go on that ride with Tom Holland,
because I also feel like you also run the risk, you know, if we'd see him go through college, kind of going through some of the same beats, like, oh, well, I want to go on my school trip. Oh, I can't miss, you know, class. Like all the stuff we've already seen. It works in comics or in like a TV show because we're getting this week in, week out. But when you only get a movie every 3 years, you got to be careful how you explore some of those, and you don't want to risk repeating yourself too heavily.
It's true, but you also get to hit on a lot of like important points with Spider-Man. I mean, you could see a movie where we see him making some of the mistakes at Iron Man, where he founds Parker Industries and is trying to handle the world on a more global stage. There's Spider-Verse, which is something they could touch on in the MCU, and they haven't yet. And yeah, I mean, as much as the movie was terrible when they tried it, and as much as Venom was just okay, I want to see a good take on Spider-Man versus Venom. I really want to see that.
But because they've already established Venom as an anti-hero,
it's got to be Carnage. You can't now have Venom come in and fight Spider-Man.
But Spider-Man and Carnage is also different from Spider-Man and Venom. The fact that they established him as an anti-hero, we're not going to get the classic Venom.
Yeah, we're not going to get the bell tower sequence or
spider, right?
Yeah,
that we want. Unfortunately, that's a whole. That's the next version of the MCU when Disney buys up Sony. But anyway, we want to know what you guys think. You know, would you like to see Kraven in the next Spidey? If not, who do you think works best with Peter's great secret revealed? Of course, you can join us live over at twitch.tv/checkpointxp every Thursday, sometime after 1 p.m. Let us know what your thoughts are on all of our topics. Now for the last post-credit scene.
Yes.
Now this was the one that blew my mind. And if you didn't stick around for the post-credit scenes, you might be thinking that Spider-Man kind of dropped the ball on the way that they wrote Nick Fury, because he acted differently.
This is true. So
and it could have easily been explained because he had one scene where he said, you know, I blip away and then I come back 5 years. I don't know nothing.
Yeah.
That can kind of serve
a little bit,
yeah. Right? But in the post-credit scene, we see Fury and Maria, and they're in the car just driving, looking at each other. And then I didn't even notice it at first when it made like the yeah. like noise. I'm like, wait, did I miss something? And suddenly they're both Skrulls. They are Talos and I forget what his mate's name is.
I don't remember.
But
Skrulls.
Yeah, they're Skrulls. And they then call Nick Fury on the phone because they feel like they really screwed up the whole Peter Parker thing.
Yeah.
And he answers the phone and he's sitting on a beach. And as the camera pans out, it's a hologram that goes away and he stands up and he is on a spaceship full of Skrulls. Who the hell knows where?
Yeah.
So the first thing is, this explains why he acts the way he does throughout the whole movie and why he snaps at Peter when he mentions, call Captain Marvel.
Don't you speak her name.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is true. I went and saw the movie with Robbie Fatstacks, and, you know, we enjoyed it. It was great. And Sarah was up north at the time, and she went and saw it with her mom the next day. She texted me. She's like, man, Nick Fury was a dick in this movie. I hated him.
Did she not stay for the post-credits
scenes? And I'm like, did you not stay for the post-credits? She's like, oh, the credits are playing right now. And I'm like, don't go anywhere. Text me in 5 minutes. Because, yeah, watching through that movie, it was kind of like, Nick Fury, you're a jerk.
Yeah, you're kind of losing a little bit of your edge, too.
Yeah, like you're not nearly the Nick Fury that I'm used to. I don't know what's going on. Revealing him to be a Skrull in disguise. So here's my question. How long has that been going on? Do you think it's been a long time? Does this happen regularly?
Ooh, that's a good question. Because first of all, it's a great way to finally tie back in a more substantial way to Captain Marvel. Yeah. That, you know, they've been using the Skrulls for some time. Oh.
How many times since the 90s maybe has Nick Fury been a Skrull?
Man, I don't know.
I feel like it could be a lot.
I think that you're right. It could be. Now, as far as the MCU and what we've seen and what we're concerned with, I think that they probably use the Skrulls quite a bit. But as for Nick Fury himself being a Skrull, I think that it's only... Because that's going pretty far. I feel like Nick Fury would not be a guy that's just like, yeah, go ahead, casually impersonate me.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I think that he's off planet. And he needs people to know that he's still there, that him being off planet would have an effect.
It's like,
right?
When he says, I got enemies. My eye on you.
Yeah,
like,
he has enemies. Oh, yeah. There are people that are keeping their tabs on Nick Fury as well. So I think that after the events of Endgame, it made Nick Fury realize that it's not enough to just have the Avengers here on Earth when something might show up.
Well,
I think that he's like, we need to be more preventative about this, and I want to get a better lay of the land out there in the stars. So he has Talos impersonate him on Earth while he's out there doing that.
Think about back in Avengers when they ask, you know, hey, why are we doing this? When did we start doing this? And he points at Thor and goes, he happened.
Yeah.
He dropped into the middle, you know, down, and we realized real quick that we are not prepared for what's out there. I feel like Thanos in the snap gave him that exact same revelation all over.
Well, because for him, I mean, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, first Captain Marvel, and she leaves and stuff, and it might be like, wow, that was a weird once in a lifetime type of thing. But even then, he started the Protector Initiative, which he ended up renaming to the Avengers Initiative.
Right.
And then, you know, when the Thor thing happens, he kind of buckles on. He's like, no, we have to get ahead of this now. And you're right. It just got worse and worse and worse from there.
Right. Because now we have an army of superheroes, and all of a sudden there's a guy who can snap out half of existence. Mm-hmm. Like,
now, there's another moment in Far From Home when Fury and Hill are leaving some building, and he makes an offhanded comment about Kree cells.
Does he?
You didn't catch that
one.
Oh,
no, I didn't catch that one.
You didn't catch that one. I think they're setting up Secret Invasion.
Ooh.
Except the roles are reversed, because normally the Kree are the good guys and the Skrulls are the bad guys.
Right.
But obviously, you know, Feige and his infinite wisdom to give us something new and keep us on our toes has kind of switched that around a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know exactly where Fury is out in the cosmos, but I think that it might be Kree related. And I think that not the next Thanos level, because I think it's still going to take a year or two before we start to get a good idea on where the next saga is going, you know,
right,
where the next 11, 12 films are going to lead.
We had no clue about Thanos until Avengers.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And Avengers with Loki, that was like the first big arc. I think that phase one is going to end with... Like what the next Avengers might be, Avengers 5 or whatever they end up calling
it. Right, whatever.
I think that will center around Secret Invasion.
So you think like so let's say it's New Avengers or whatever it is, or Secret Avengers, mm-hmm. or you think they'll start building the Secret Invasion from there, or
no? I think that through this next phase, yeah. that and you know, next week's going to be great because we have San Diego Comic-Con this weekend,
yeah.
where we're going to get a lot more answers.
Yeah, we'll know
but
a lot more next
I
week.
What I think would be mind-blowing, because they've talked about the next phase. They're going about the stories that they're going to tell are going to be different. They're going to be more intimate. They're going to tell them in a different way. I mean, hell, the first movie of not even just the next phase, the next saga, the first movie of the next saga is set before a lot of this even already happens, the Black Widow movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
And there's no way this is just a throwaway movie.
Yeah, when's the last time they did a throwaway movie?
Every movie matters in some way.
Right.
I think that the next phase is going to, if it's setting us up for something like Secret Invasion, that can be so big because the characters that they introduce from this point on, we have to start asking ourselves, could that be a Skrull or a Kree? Who's actually who?
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. I need answers. I need San Diego Comic-Con now. I need answers, man. I can't do this.
It's crazy. And on top of that, now we also have to worry about the Disney Plus shows.
Like WandaVision and all that, yeah.
Because those are going to directly impact the MCU. You know, we've got from a interview with Elizabeth Olsen that WandaVision is going to be about 6 episodes, 45 minutes each. It's set in the 50s. And that it's the whole idea here is that Wanda and the Vision have a family that they're basically living out, and that this is basically this whole series is Wanda's way, and we'll explore her powers further, being able to warp and bend reality. It's Wanda's way of dealing with her grief.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So now I think what we're going to start to see in these Disney Plus shows is that storylines that they want to tell, but don't have the time to do it in movies, or maybe they need a little bit more time to tell them, will be told off screen, but will still directly impact it.
Yeah. Well, it's something that we saw with Far From Home is, you know, the blip, the snap, whatever you want to call it happened. But just because everyone's back, that doesn't mean everything is fine.
Oh, no.
People are going to suffer.
Imagine conspiracy theorists that refuse to believe those who came back are actually the actual people.
And imagine once their word gets out of a Kree invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, oh, what? They're not actually back. They're just shapeshifters.
And then this obviously doesn't even take into all the possibilities that we can talk about, and all the conspiracies and all the theories of like how they're going to bring in the Fantastic Four, or how they're going to bring in the mutants.
Yeah.
It's
the X-Men. Yeah, everything.
It's an overload, man. Like we need the announcements out of Comic-Con just so that we have some place that we can like focus in on.
Right. Just so that we like, even if we just get the lineup of movies coming next year, and over the next 2 years, we know what they all are.
Yeah. Because here's
at
the
least
thing.
Then we can have an idea.
The only one that we know for sure because it's filming is Black Widow. You realize that Marvel hasn't actually officially confirmed the Black Widow movie is happening.
Right. We just know because it's filming.
Yeah.
But we don't have anything other than little bits and pieces that Shang-Chi is happening or.
Right. Rumor.
Doctor Strange 2. Rumor.
Still just a rumor.
Probably a good rumor. But
yeah, of course.
Black Panther 2. Probably
a
good
Guardians
rumor.
3 is coming.
Guardians
at some
3.
Point.
We know that one.
Yeah.
But I mean, Guardians 3 is probably not anywhere in the very near future. We know that one's still a ways out.
I think because Suicide Squad 2, I'm sure, is finished, not a pre-production. So I think that it might be in post.
You going to see Suicide Squad 2?
Yeah.
I think I am, too.
Yeah. Gunn did it, so yeah.
Yeah, James Gunn did it. That's what I mean. Like, I saw the first one, and it was awful, but
I thought the first, for DC, I thought the first one was fine. For what it was, it was fine.
Yeah.
And look, I'm a big Margot Robbie and a big Harley Quinn fan.
Yeah,
so you
I am
can't
too.
Go wrong there.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad 2.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Be an interesting one. But anyway, guys, that's going to wrap it up here for The Other Identity. We are glad to be back, and we would love to be able to take your questions on future shows. So again, make sure that you connect with us on all of those social medias. That's Checkpoint XP on Twitter, on Facebook, Checkpoint _ XP on Instagram, and catch us live, twitch.tv/checkpointxp. We're going to be here every Thursday. We're not sure what the time is. We usually have the channel live from 1 to 6. Daily show, of course, is every weekday 4 to 6, but somewhere within there we will have the other identity. So join us when you can. We'd love to have you. And I don't do the same intro, so should I still make you do the same outro?
I can do the outro.
Let's do it.
Will Kraven the Hunter be made interesting? Will San Diego Comic-Con make all of this irrelevant? Tune in next time. Same Twitch time, same Twitch channel.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.